Notice that Jesus says, prepare, where is my guest room that I may prepare my Passover? The guest room is inside of each of us, and Christ wants to come and be our guest, but he waits to be invited in. He doesn't, like any guest, he doesn't come barging in. He is expecting an invitation, so that's what we're here for. I have an airline story, which is completely true. It's not my own, personally, but it's an interesting one. For all of us, in some professions, everything is based on seniority in an airline, and that's true for a number of things, like the monks at Mount Angel. They come in not by age, but by the length of time they've been in the monastery. So in the same way, your hire date is the most precious thing, really, in that life, because we bid for shifts, and so the further up on the list you are, the better shift you're going to get. I know I had three choices of a date. If I'd known it was going to follow me for 10 years, I'd have picked the first date, you know. But anyway, so when pilots are working for shifts, you know, each one is assigned a certain type of aircraft that they are qualified for, and then within that, there are certain routes that they are assigned, and then within that, they bid with each other for which routes that they want. So there was a pilot who he got up and bid for a shift that he wanted and a certain flight that he wanted to fly. And then usually crew scheduling, which does that for the pilots, will call them back to confirm that they are in fact flying the next morning or 2 days later. So this pilot put a bid in on this called JetNet, at least the American it is. And so, however, he never got a call back. And so he wasn't sure if he had been scheduled or not. So he later found out that that somebody else with slightly more seniority than him had bid that trip and had gotten it in place of him. So he woke up the next morning and turned on the television and discovered who it was that had taken his place and what had happened. I think you can probably guess the rest of the story, huh? The pilot was on American Flight 11, and that was the flight to Boston that went into the World Trade Center that day, and the pilot that was supposed to fly it got outbid. And so this story is recounted in a book called He Took My Place. That was the center of it, and the thesis of the book is Christ took my place, and he's willing to save us from the disaster of a world view that has nothing more in it than the materialism of this world, which ultimately is futile, useless, and disappointing in the end. Instead, Christ, who saves us from that world to show us his love, came and took the place that this disaster of the world without Christ, so that we might live forever. And so that image sticks in my mind. Just as an aside, when I went to the World Trade Center Museum, I preached about that a year and a half ago. That's the most downloaded sermon I've ever had. I think on some level we all relate to, you know, the unknown and how things happen so quickly. But when I went there, I was very surprised, since Flight 11 is one that I both flew on and booked, you know, for 10 years. I was surprised to find part of the fuselage of that very plane in the World Trade Center Museum that this pilot just missed. I always see that disaster from inside of a plane. Most people don't think of it that way, but I do. And so I sat there for a long time looking at that and the mystery of life. I think there's a lot of wisdom to be gained in such things. So often we just miss something because somebody helped us or rescued us. And Jesus, in coming to the Last Supper, he asks us to prepare a place for him. He himself wishes to offer his life, his body and blood. Jesus is hidden in many places. Yesterday we had our second First Communion for our Hispanic kids, and there's about 20 more that will be doing it in the coming weeks. Some of them wanted to wait at 20 baptisms yesterday. It was a hard worker. And so they want to have one party for both, so we go the extra mile for them. But I told the kids, I said, you know, after Christ rose from the dead, nobody recognized him. I presume that his mother did, but we don't have a recounting of that meeting, which I'm sure took place. But Mary Magdalene, St. Peter, St. John, who stayed at the foot of the cross, and it goes on, the road to Emmaus. Some recognized his voice, some after a miracle. Some even looking at him weren't sure who it was. And so the moral of that is, the lesson is, Christ says, I will be with you always, but until we have the supper together in the next world, you're only going to recognize me in disguise, hidden, in ways that you have to look. And we see this in the needy around us, our family that don't at all remind us of Christ, but yet he's present in the sick, in the circumstances of life, from the most tragic to the most wonderful, and especially in the readings today that speaks to your heart, hopefully, and in the Blessed Sacrament, the body and blood of Christ. There's nothing more humble for Christ other than his own mortal body that he took out of love for us so that he could live and show us his love even to death, than to take the form of bread and wine in the Eucharist. Lest we think that is an invention of later years, as is sometimes thrown at the church, you can look at Friday we had the Feast of St. Justin Martyr. He lived at the beginning of the second century, a pagan who was a very learned man and investigated all the religions of his time. And after much investigation, he writes, he became a Christian because it was the one that appealed to him philosophically and in a real way. He later wrote several books of apologetics in which he described the beliefs of that era. If he were to come to Mass this morning, he would recognize it because the outline of what we do today was present in the second century. You'd be surprised if you looked it up how close it is. And he describes very clearly that the Eucharist they believed at the beginning of the second century is really the body and blood of Christ. The theology took many years to think about, nor can we ever come to the end of that mystery. The greater mystery is, why does he want to be so close to us? Why does he hide himself so much? It's difficult to see Christ in the bread and wine. Yet, when Christ was alive on earth, even before he died and rose, you couldn't see that was God. He was hidden within this normal human body. And he wants us to have the same experience of having to come to faith without seeing the glory of God on earth. Yet there is a kind of glory in humility. It is said that in thinking about the hierarchy of heaven, that there is a hierarchy. None of us will be the Blessed Virgin Mary's place. If you're going to be in the neighborhood of Mother Teresa, I'll come visit you, but I'm not going to be, I don't know about, she's not, I'm not going to be in that housing development, you know what I'm saying? But we'll all have a hierarchy, just as the 12 choirs of angels, some of them fell out of place during their test. So we're having a test, and there is a perfect place that God wishes for us, but it depends on our response now. And in that hierarchy of heaven, if we knew what was waiting for us, we would do everything we could to prepare for heaven, which is right around the corner. And Jesus waits for us for that response from us. But before we have that experience, we have to have this profound life of humility to know that we are dust. I've shared with all of you, I buried my good friend, Father Jim, been a couple weeks now. And how many people I've buried, but when it's your best friend in that little ashuary, we realize that's not all that we are. But look at the humility that this, without Christ, this is what I am, and this is the end of my dreams. And that is not the way the world is. The materialistic world that we live in now can't see beyond the five senses. I think we're living in the darkest era of human history in some ways. So smart scientifically, so dumb in what's really out there waiting for us. And to live a life without that knowledge. Last weekend I was in Atlantic City with a happy wedding that I agreed to do a year and a half ago, and it seemed like a long flight for 4 days. I didn't stay longer because we're going to Italy, and I'm thinking, gee, these are awful close together. But if you've ever been to Atlantic City, you've got the boardwalk there, and people are walking around, I don't want to say aimlessly, but when you're on vacation, you don't have a destination. You're just floating around looking at the wood on the, I was, because it was so beautiful, and such and that. But so many people walk through life aimlessly. And then when they get to the end of the boardwalk, which is 6 miles long, by the way, they think they fall off the edge and that's the end of life. And that isn't the way it is. Our faith and our hearts tell us there's more to this world than meets the eye. No matter how long we live, it isn't long enough. And so Christ invites us to be in his home. He wishes to come into ours, and he wants us to be at the Passover. How can we possibly be at this Passover supper 2,000 years later? But each Mass is all one sacrifice. Throughout time and history, we are all at the Passover in our own unique circumstances and place. Kaiser is as close to the Passover as the disciples were, because there's only one sacrifice. And Jesus, on the night before he died, wanted his church and us who know him as part of all humanity to be one with his body and blood, so that when he goes to the cross, we will go with him. We will die with him. We will rise with him. We are blood brothers and sisters of the second person of the Trinity. The thought of what that means is beyond our comprehension, but it should give us joy in a troubled world, that no suffering will not receive a compensation, an explanation, a benefit to us, no matter how awful it is. And so Christ, you know, when we, sounds trite, but when we eat a pizza, the pizza becomes part of us. And the more you eat, the, you know, like when you're on vacation, we come home wanting to get rid of that. But when we eat the Eucharist, we become part of Christ's body. He transforms us into an image of him. And the Eucharist also is represented by being fed by the sacrament of the present moment, of being fed by the Word of God. We become the body and blood of Christ so we can make a difference in the world by what we do. But Christ invites us to the mystery of the Eucharist. If we have trouble with that belief, which, let's face it, when he first talked about it, most of his disciples left him. They didn't understand what he was talking about. But as we receive, we say, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. Just as a reminder, when we are at the front before we receive, as the person in front of us is receiving, we should make some kind of an act of reverence, either sign of the cross or a small bow or something along those lines. Some people even genuflect. But to remind us of who we are receiving, of the great gift of being invited to the table of the Eucharist while on earth and in heaven, please God, if that is what we've chosen by our life on earth and our faith, there's a place prepared for us with our name on a table, and one can only imagine who's sitting there. I have a lot of friends I hope will be there, but Christ will be, because he can be everywhere at the same time, he'll be right at our table as a friend. Say, well, you ate with me many times at Mass. Didn't you recognize me? Didn't you know I was here? Didn't I promise you I would be here in many ways, and especially in the Eucharist? So we're grateful to God at this wonderful feast, kind of the end of the post-Easter season with the Sacred Heart coming on Friday, and we ask God to give us a greater love for him, a sacrifice, a desire to offer ourselves to God and others, to live not just for ourselves, but for him who died and rose for us.